welcome to La Liga Weekly. There's no point changing the name, is there? Obviously, there are no matches, but if you fancy listening to a couple of middle-aged English blokes having a chat about football anyway, here you go. Essential listening as you make your absolutely vital trip to Sports Direct to pick up a new Slazenger tracksuit and some weird-looking chocolate. Terry's on his computer at home. I have to apologise for the chirping of the birds you might be able to hear in the background. We hope to have the low hum of traffic back as soon as we can. Terry, are you fitting well?
Yes, I am, John. Yep, all good and maintaining the self-isolation that's been probably for 2 weeks now. So I have to admit, though, life is much different for me self-isolating, apart from what you're just watching football on television at home. I've come to realise I don't have much of a social life other than the world of football. So it's something that might need a solution after the when we're all back to normal.
Yeah, so there's self-isolation with football and without football. That's what we need, is some kind of special lab somewhere where we send all the footballers to go and play football and be tested all the time, so then the rest of us can stay at home. That's good. Right, we've been taking your questions, everybody, so thank you very much for those. We'll just crack on and answer those, basically. George, what's your best keeper, defender, midfielder and forward of the season so far?
Keeper, Courtois.
Oh, yeah.
Bearing in mind that the situation he's been through at Real Madrid. Centre-back, Diego Carlos at Sevilla. Midfielder, Thomas Partey, Atletico Madrid. And I would then go for Alexander Isak. He's burst onto the scene this year. I'm not saying he's necessarily the best player, the best centre-forward in La Liga, but I think he's, if I had a large chequebook, they are the four players that I would sign for a club that I was manager of.
Cool. Well, actually, Anthony's question is attached to that. Then, if Terry was asked to recommend a centre-back, a centre-midfielder and a forward to a club, who would he pick? Now, obviously, you've sort of given us a forward, a hint on that one. Mohamed Salisu is one I thought of as well, Terry, in that situation. When you look at the stats, I think, for defenders in La Liga, he's up there with all of the guys who play for the bigger clubs who are on bigger money. He's up there, so he's definitely a possibility. So give us another couple of sort of outsiders for potential transfers.
Well, I think that there's another one at Valladolid as well, a player that I like called Joaquin Fernandez, who's a 23-year-old central midfield player essentially, but he this season for Valladolid he has played centre back in a two. Right-sided centre-back in a three. He's gone into holding midfield as well, and he's often, in some games, swaps positions according to the needs of the team at that particular time. So he's another one. I guess one of the young players that have burst onto the scene again, I mentioned Isak, would be Ferran Torres of Valencia. I think I hope his progression is going to be better than Carlos Soler, for instance, and possibly Gonzalo Guedes, who we... You know, when he came into Valencia's team on loan and before they bought him, he looked as if he was going to be a world beater. There's still time, of course. He's had one or two injury issues. But I think with Ferran Torres, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, playing in the first team on a regular basis at such a young age, he's another player that I think, I hope, has a bright future. So I think he's another one that I would recommend.
Okay, and so while we're on related questions, Wes, who are your favourite? Actually, it says top. La Liga players, past and current. So he doesn't need any reasons, he just wants favourites.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because two of them are still playing, and they shouldn't be. Joaquin and Santi Cazorla. I mean, we've seen, you know, over the years with Joaquin, first of all with Betis and Valencia and Malaga, and then, you know, back to Betis again. It's been a sensational career. And I've always enjoyed watching him play from day one. He's had to change, of course, over the years, but he still retains a decent burst of speed. And with Santi Cazorla, when you look at him, it was interesting this week. I saw it must be a big blow for him not to have the Euros at the end of this season, because you do feel that possibly another year's time, it might be too far for him. And he has come out and said that his body obviously doesn't feel the same as what it was when he was, you know, 10 years younger, and he is starting to feel it. It's been incredible what he's achieved after such... I mean, we're not talking about a routine, long-term injury to a footballer. What he's achieved after coming back from a situation which, you know, there was talk at one stage that he might lose his foot. So to come back and play at the level he has done is extraordinary. Then you go back over the years to those that are not playing anymore. Iniesta has to be, you know, and Xavi, of course, but Iniesta was always a personal favourite of mine. I think people are realising I'm going for the diminutive type of player. I don't know why that is. And of course, Lionel Messi, who's been there throughout the last 14, 15 years. Incredible body of work from a player that's so gifted, it's ridiculous. But for him to do it, the amount of time, you know, the amount of time that he has done it for, we've talked about it, the 50, 60 games a season, that him and Ronaldo, and he has to be another player. You know, and then that they maintain that year in, year out is absolutely ridiculous, to be honest. And then you go back to the Galacticos of Real Madrid, watching Zidane play on a regular basis, Roberto Carlos, Luis Figo. You know, we've been blessed in the last 15 years in particular with some extraordinary players. I mean, when Barcelona and Real Madrid were playing each other in their peak, we were looking at probably 15 of the best players in the world in their positions playing in one match. And I think that was the level that we kind of unrealistically expect nowadays. And that isn't the case, unfortunately.
So you've sort of rejected Wes's parameters, only picking three there, haven't you? Because I've worked hard. I want to get Toquero in, just because I think he represents something in football. He's obviously not in the same league as any of the other players that you've talked about. But he is in terms of enthusiastic and endeavour and just representing something. I ended up narrowing it down. I just couldn't decide on Iniesta, Xavi, so I went for Dani Alves just because, attitudes, yeah. Sense of fun, joie de vivre that he brings to football and, you know, from not just Barcelona, obviously, he was brilliant at Sevilla as well, yeah, in that really entertaining, enlivening kind of severe team that he played for middle part of the previous decade. And then Zidane. I went for Zidane above the... Because obviously both Ronaldos. I mean, there's so many brilliant players at Real Madrid who you've loved watching over the years. And for the current ones, I went Messi, obviously. I went Odegaard because I've really enjoyed watching him play this season. And Thomas Partey. I think he's just a really admirable player, Thomas Partey. I like the fact that he does every bit of the game. You know, he's skillful, he's intelligent, he's strong, I think he's just a bit of everything in midfield, so I went with him.
Yeah.
But one other thing to test you on, Terry, because there's this thing knocking around on Twitter at the moment where you name your four just inspirational footballers. So, you know, again, it's they can be anywhere you like, and you went Jimmy Greaves, Steve Perriman, Spurs connection, obviously, yep. Marco van Basten, Diego Maradona. And I think most people have gone for some kind of combo of childhood, because obviously Greaves was in your childhood, wasn't he? Brilliant goal scorer for Spurs. And then, you know, the sort of broaden it out to the world as you get a bit older.
Yeah, I went for Jimmy Greaves because it was my dad's hero. So I was about 8 years old. Not attending Spurs games on a regular basis, but constantly having Jimmy Greaves pushed down my throat by my dad. And it was clear that he was a special player. So he was my first idol. And then, surprisingly enough, Stevie Perriman came into the team not long after Jimmy Greaves, to be honest. So it was that was my first genuine footballing hero, a teenager playing on a regular basis for Spurs. I think he was wearing the number 8 shirt, the same as Jimmy Greaves. So it was an instant follow-on. And then with Van Basten and Maradona, they were players that inspired me during my playing career. You know, we were fortunate to be able to watch Italian football back in the 80s and 90s. And watching those two players were the first sort of European, I know Maradona's South American, but players playing in Europe that we got to see on a regular basis. And that inspired me. So as a player, I looked to Van Basten. I was lucky enough to play against him when he was young. I was warned in a pre-season friendly at Ajax for Manchester United by the former Ajax player Jesper Olsen that they had this unbelievable teenage centre-forward. And I remember Paul McGrath saying, yeah, that won't be a problem. How old is he? 18, 17? They're not a problem. And I remember after about 20 minutes, he received the ball just over the just in the attacking half, brought it down out the air, rolled Paul McGrath, strode away from Paul McGrath and smacked one in the top corner from 30 yards. And we all thought, oh, he's a player. And you know, to see him then go on and play for AC Milan in that famous team that you couldn't fail to enjoy watching, with Hullett and Rijkaard and Baresi and Costa Curtin, Maldini, Ancelotti. It was a brilliant team to watch. So that was one of the biggest reasons I went for him. And Maradona, likewise, in the 80s, 90s. I know you saw the documentary. I thought it could have gone a bit wider as well, that documentary. It was brilliant. It was over nearly 2.5 hours. I could have done another 2 hours. It was a shame we didn't get to see him in his Barcelona days. He's, you know, even playing for Sevilla after leaving Napoli. So it was, I mean, he was just an extraordinary player. And at one, again, he came onto the scene. I can remember seeing video footage of him playing I think it must have been an under-20s, under-18 tournament for Argentina. And it was breathtaking. And you see that, of course, we got to know his lifestyle that accompanied his football career. It's extraordinary. You know, he was able to play for as long as he did. So, you know, he was living his life and just a supreme natural talent. But again, another player that, as a player, you went out and tried to, you know, if you saw Maradona do a skill, Van Basten do a skill, no, loads of other players as well, you went out on the training pitch and tried to do it. Didn't go down too well at Wimbledon, I must admit, whenever you're trying your double drag backs and back heels, but it was something you used to do in your spare time, knowing full well it was never going to be needed while I was playing at Plough Lane.
See, I went for my choices are all much more sort of admirable people, kind of people. You wouldn't want your daughter going out with Maradona, would you? So mine are all because I went for a couple of Middlesbrough players. So David Armstrong, from when I was a very small kid in the 70s. I mean, you'll have come across David Armstrong, just an ultra reliable, hard-working player. And he worked in broadcast. He was a co-coms in Southampton, Bournemouth kind of area, because he moved down there. Borough sold him when we sold all of our good players at one point. Tony Mowbray, obviously the Blackburn Rovers manager, just because he was an inspirational character when Borough were at a low point. Messi,
yeah,
because I think, you know, the danger with Messi is that we underestimate him, that we start putting him in a bracket with everybody else, where I think he does deserve his own bracket for his, you know, his consistency, as you say, his body of work over so many years. And the other one I went for is Lothar Matthäus, and I can almost say I refer you to my Thomas Partey answer with Lothar Matthäus, just ultra reliable German midfielder, World Cup winner, just did everything right, every bit of the game, super, made the most of his talent, you know, not in the bracket of Zidane or anyone like that in terms of midfield talent, but just in terms of churning out rock solid performances when required, without the sort of bearing of the teeth that you get from Roy Keane, for example. So he's in that category, but a sort of a level-headed player who contributed so much. That's why I went for Lothar Matthäus.
I think it was interesting. I went for inspirational when I probably feel I'm too old now to be inspired, even by Messi. Yeah, he's a brilliant player, but you know, I'm a middle-aged man, and to have a hero isn't the same as when you had a hero when you were in a primary school, which hence Jimmy Greaves, Steve Perriman. I played with Steve Perriman. He was a fantastic captain. That was a thrill to play with your idol in a team for a couple of seasons. And then those players that inspired me when I was still allowed to have heroes in my 20s, Van Basten, Maradona. Now at my age, I'm guess I'm too old to have a hero.
Right then. So Beast of the Door has got a question for us. Has the quality of football peaked this decade? We sort of discussed this last week, I think. How long before we have to see the best three teams in the world play in La Liga, how it was? And he picked out 2014 to 2018. Did you prefer the super era, as he calls it, now there are no super teams anymore, and he prefers the previous, I think he prefers the super era, as it were. Lee Cosgrove asks a similar question. Why do you think Spanish teams are not as strong in Europe as they were a few years ago?
Well, I think the second question from Lee, we have to bear in mind that we don't know what's going to happen this season with Europe. So it was just one season where the Premier League had all four teams in the finals. I still, I know it's difficult to talk about this season's competition because, you know, we have a tie with Real Madrid that's a Manchester City that's in the favour of Manchester City. But it wouldn't be a massive surprise if Real Madrid did something in that second leg. Likewise, you know, Barcelona against Napoli, isn't it?
Napoli, yeah.
Yep. It's so long ago. That's in the balance. So I think that, you know, both of those teams are still capable of winning it. You know, difficult first legs. Barcelona have got the advantage in theirs if it's ever played. Real Madrid, as I said, have got a lot to do in theirs. But both teams are capable. They're not the teams that, as you made the point there, 2014 to 2018 was the peak, I think, for both teams. As I said earlier, when they were playing, it was, you know, you could have a dozen of the best players in the world shared between the two teams. Is that going to happen again? I don't think any of us know anymore what the future is going to hold. You know, how are clubs going to deal with the aftermath of what we're all going through at the moment? How that's going to impact financially? It's, you know, you can get really deep because you're talking about, we've joked in the past that clubs could survive without attendances, you know, without crowds due to the TV revenue that's generated by the clubs. But I think we're seeing now that clearly isn't true. You know, it might be okay for, in the Premier League, somewhere like Bournemouth, we get 11,000 supporters, but it's not okay for, you know, Manchester United and their 60,000 and Tottenham with their new stadium being full up. The money that's generated from all those people turning up, spending money on the day, it still is money that's needed because of the huge sums of money that have been paid, you know, to players in salaries, transfer fees, and to agents, so in commissions. So I don't know how it's going to play in the future. You know, we're reading stories that Barcelona can ask their players to, you know, suspend salaries or take a pay cut. We're entering into a whole new territory here, so I don't know, you know, obviously, how things are going to turn out in the future. So I think this is a massive warning sign. The alarm bells are ringing for a number of big clubs who never thought this day was going to come, where, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona never thought financially, oh, you know, we might have trouble here actually paying the salaries of the players because we're not getting, in their case, 70,000-80,000 supporters every week. You know, so it's money that's missing. So it's going to be interesting to see how the world of football plays out in the next few years. Certainly with the next transfer window, whenever that is, it's going to be interesting. I don't think we're going to see the big sums of money that we've seen post Neymar going to PSG. I hope not.
No, I mean, you know, I don't think many people would mourn if footballers got paid less. You know, in the grand scheme of things, if you believe in market forces, all of that, then, you know, why shouldn't they get paid a lot of money? Because people want to pay a lot of money to watch what they do. But when it all shakes down, you've got decisions to make, I think, haven't you? Whether how you reconfigure everything, because it's the case with the wider economy as well. So it's such a shock to the economy. In a sense, you've got a choice, exactly, of what you do to as you pick it back up again. Now, if you leave it to the big clubs allowed to do exactly what they want and you give all the power to the big clubs, then you'll lose some small clubs along the way. So it's a question of whether the authorities, what they want to do. Do they deliberately say, listen, let's deliberately strive to make this fair for everybody as we rebuild the divisions and rebuild professional football again? Or not? Do you just leave it and just say, well, you know, if some people go to the wall, they go to the wall. You know, it's philosophical choices.
I hope it doesn't accelerate the cause that some are fighting for with the European Super League. I hope that doesn't become an issue where the big clubs, you know, decide to go their own way. I've already seen Infantino talking about maybe less games, less competitions in the future because of the packed, crowded football schedule, which it is. And it has got increasingly congested over the years. So I was worried then. I thought, oh, you know, is this a sign that they're going to use it to their advantage, the powers that be, to force another issue on us in terms of, you know, the European Super League as opposed to the Champions League?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a possibility, isn't it? Yeah, but yeah. Maybe the lesson is a bit less travel. You know, it might just be one of the lessons from this, but we'll learn those, I guess, in time, won't we? Let's go back in time again, Terry, shall we, to Kelvin's question. Since you have both started commentating on Spanish football, which season has been your favourite to commentate on? I have to go back in time. Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
No, please, fire away.
So I couldn't believe it was this far back. If I refer to it as the Pandiani season, because I was thinking the game where Pandiani, I was thinking, come on, the one where they finished level on points. So Real Madrid, Barcelona finished level on points at the end of the season. Walter Pandiani playing for Espanyol scored a hat trick against Real Madrid, but they still won 4-3. Now that was a couple of weeks out from the end of the season, and then second last game of the season, Espanyol got a draw with Barcelona. So those Espanyol results tipped the title to Real Madrid, and they finished on the same points at the end of the season. And I thought, oh, that was a couple of years ago. It was 2006-07.
So. I'm going to go for that Atletico Madrid win. I think it was so. It came out of the blue. We'd seen improvement from Simeone's team that won the Copa del Rey. We'd seen Diego Costa return back from Rayo Vallecano. We'd seen Gabby come back in cheap. We see Wenfren suddenly develop from a right winger to right back. But it was so out of the blue that they were then able to put together a sustained, consistent season, which saw them in dramatic fashion in the last game of the season at the Nou Camp, with Godin's goal, drawing 1-1, getting the draw that needed them to win the title. And to see the Barcelona supporters, how they reacted as well. They didn't disappear. They stayed there. They applauded their opponents. And it was just, you know, in an era, it's, you know, since I've been watching and working in Spanish football, it's the only time someone other than Barcelona and Real Madrid haven't won it. So I think it does stick out. I mean, we go back further to Deportivo La Coruña. But I think in the period that I've been watching since 2004 up until now, working, commentating, scouting, I think that was an extraordinary season that Atletico Madrid were able to, you know, to put together to put an end temporarily to the domination primarily of Barcelona, but also of Real Madrid. So I would go for that. The way they won it on the last day as well, I think that was an outstanding season.
Okay, so while we're doing nostalgia, Daryl says, trip down memory lane, most enjoyable games in recent memory. And George, he wants the best Clásico. And he's given us the parameters of 2009 to 2019. I guess that depends on George's age. One of mine actually goes a bit older than that, because again, I had to look it up. So best games. Just pick out a couple of the best games, Terry, of recent times.
Well, I've gone for the... This is a selfish point of view. I was actually in the stadium for the 5-0 Barcelona against Real Madrid. Marino was manager, Pep was, you know, in charge of Barcelona. And it wasn't a surprise because we, you know, the scoreline was a surprise, but Barcelona home advantage. It was the beginning of Pep's era, so we weren't really in tune with how successful they were going to be. And it was just, I was sitting next to Mark Hughes, who was working for Sky. I actually got a late shout. I think somebody dropped out of being able to do something. And I was phoned up at midnight the night before. It was on a Monday night, the game. I think there was some sort of election in Barcelona why it couldn't be played on the Sunday. So on Sunday night, I got a phone call to ask if I would like to do it, of course, and to go out there and witness the best display I've ever seen from a team. The fact I was there live probably... you know, makes it slightly biased in my opinion. But I was sitting next to Mark Hughes and I was commentating, but I could see him by gestures and the way he was, you know, I know he's an ex-Barcelona player, but the football played that night from Barcelona was just, it was out of this world. And it was an incredible game to be at. I've been lucky to work on 4 Clásicos. I do get accused of being biased sometimes, but I've been in the stadium for 4 Clásicos and the aggregate score is 16-2 to Barcelona. So they've had a 2-0 at the Bernabeu. They've had a 4-0 at the Bernabeu. There was a 5-0. No, 16-1. And there was a 5-1 in the Nou Camp last season. That was the first time I'd seen Real Madrid score in a Clásico that I'd been commentating on. So, you know, I've been lucky to go and see those games on a pretty regular basis. But one that sticks out for me, and I was looking through the archives And I think we worked on it together. And it was a period when we were doing the Monday night internet games. So I think it was 2013. And I'm pretty sure we used to do most of those, didn't we, together? And it was a it was a Betis Sevilla. It was the Grand Derby. And Sevilla went 3-0 up in the Benito Villamarín, as it was known as then, with the Ruiz Lopera, wasn't it? The stadium? Different stadium. Yep. And Sevilla went 3-0 up in the first half with a couple of goals from Rakitic. I think Negredo got one as well to put it out. It appeared to be out of reach. And then Betis come back and made a comeback to draw 3-3. And it was, you know, you talk about atmospheric stadiums, that helps. Adrian was in goal for Real Betis, made a couple of mistakes for the first couple of goals. Gary Medel was sent off, surprise, surprise. Ruben Castro scored a penalty. And then there was a couple of players, Dorlan Pabon, who hasn't left a lasting impression. He got the second to make it 3-2. And a player called Nosa.
He
got the equaliser in the 90th minute. So the drama that you get from those games in a period, I have to be honest, with Sevilla have been dominating of late. But those atmospheric games, again, that, as I say, that was on a Monday night as well. So that stands out in my mind.
You know, I do remember, it wasn't me. It was Dominic Johnson commentating.
Oh, was it?
Because when Nosa scored, it was good, really good line. He said, "Nosa, yes, sir," was his commentary line. And I remember, I was thinking, yeah, good line, Dom, good line. Yeah, so I must give credit where it's due. Dom, you were with that day. I also picked there's something special about that game. It's one of the ones that we're hanging on to play, isn't it, at the moment? Unfortunately, yes. Delayed. The 5-3 when Betis scored in the first minute, scored in the 90th minute, and then everything else in between. All sorts of things went crazy, didn't they? It was absolutely a balmy game between Sevilla Betis, that one. Betis won 5-3 a couple of years ago. And then just because you're obviously some kind of bad luck charm on Real Madrid, we better a classic Real Madrid Clásico goes back beyond George's parameters. But 2005, the 4-2, Owen, Beckham, Owen, those days, Ronaldo, Zidane,
goal, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, that when you're talking about a period of those teams having, so this was just pre-Messi, wasn't it? Because Xavi and Iniesta were just coming in to the team then. But Ronaldinho, I mean, they're incredible players through that period as well in Spanish football.
I definitely agree with that. I was lucky to watch when I was working and living out there. To every opportunity I got that was within, decent travelling distance when Manchester City back in the day were, didn't want to pay more than 40p a mile and were reluctant for me to travel more than 200 miles. That's when, obviously pre-Manchester City, when they didn't have the money. I was always willing to drive as far as I possibly could on the expenses to go and watch the Galacticos. Incredible period of Real Madrid's history. In terms of being an outstanding success domestically, it never happened. But, in terms of a neutral going to watch a collection of the best players in the world somehow trying to be formed into a team was always something special.
Right, let's take a quick break, just in case we get paid some money. I doubt it, but and then we'll come back with the rest of the questions.
Much needed these times, John.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the adverts for whoever it may be. They're probably not doing any business at the moment. Probably can't buy anything. It keeps costs down is the one thing, doesn't it? Not being able to do anything at all. But there we are. Anyway, back to less important matters. Richard would like to hear a review of the Liverpool-Atletico game, because obviously we didn't really have a long chat about that one. So, go on, Terry. Fire away. Liverpool-Atleti. Atleti got through. Through to what we don't yet know, but a hugely fascinating game.
Well, it was the, you know, those minnows of European football, Atletico Madrid, which was which is how it was portrayed. You know, it was. I don't see it as a massively surprising result. I know Liverpool were the current champions. They've been in the final the season before, but Atletico Madrid have been in a couple of finals. They'd won the Europa League. We know the quality they've got. It wasn't as if, you know, you would almost in the English press, it was as if Liverpool were beaten by Getafe. You know, these minnows of European football. That was absolute nonsense. So it wasn't a massive surprise to me. I think the concern, if you're an Atletico Madrid supporter, would have been their form this season has been sketchy. It's, you know, it is a season of transition for a team that's lost some important players. Managed to keep the manager, who's the highest paid manager in the world. I didn't realise that by some considerable distance. Hence the reason he's, you know, not in a rush to leave Atletico Madrid. But with him as manager, with the players that they've got, I always genuinely thought it was going to be a real severe test for Liverpool and would give us a sort of a judgment on how good Liverpool are, because I think the Premier League this season, you can literally count on one hand the teams that you would qualify as having good seasons. So Liverpool clearly are. Leicester clearly are. Wolves, Sheffield United, that's it. You know, the Manchester Uniteds, Manchester Cities, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham. You know, those teams are not backing up the Premier League this season with consistently good performances. So I always thought it was going to be a test for Liverpool. It, clearly, the second leg in particular, they had, you know, more attacking play. They resorted to chucking loads of crosses into the box, which played into the hands of, you know, the Atletico central defenders, Felipe and Savic. I thought Atletico Madrid were absolutely superb. And the criticism against them for the way that they played was absolutely, it's ludicrous. I mean, it was, first of all, from Jurgen Klopp and then the English media as well. It was, you know, it was almost as if Atletico Madrid had cheated. What people forgot to mention was over the two legs, they scored four goals. So this super ultra defensive performance was, you know, to score four goals in two games against Liverpool, to, you know, only concede the two in the second leg. They won both legs, Atletico Madrid. So it was, you know, as I say, it wasn't a surprise to me. It wasn't a surprise to people to watch Spanish football on a regular basis that Atletico could produce two of their classic performances. What is the big surprise, I have to be honest, is, and you know, listeners of this podcast will, by and large, know that the type of player Marcos Llorente is. They know that I've been banging on about him since he never got the opportunities at Real Madrid. He struggled to get opportunities at Atletico. And he doesn't come on and score two goals in a normal game of football. So I think that was the element of surprise. But no, I thought Atletico were superb. You can argue the merits whether they deserve to win it this year. Matter the fact though is that they did win both games and went through, and I thought there was a disrespectful response from the British media about to how Atletico Madrid won those two games.
Yeah. Klopp was a bad loser, wasn't he? But then it's probably not a bad thing to be a bad loser, is exactly. It when you're in that position. Yeah. Cohen Griffith says, how much do you think Atletico are not destined to win the Champions League? Penalties, extra time, postponements. Now we've gone through literally every obstacle, he says. But I don't know. We don't know what's happening. Quick one on that. Stu TG, thoughts on Gary? I haven't read this, but Gary Neville's suggestion of a festival of football to finish the season, 9 games over 9 days, like kids playing every day at lunchtime. It's the same for everyone. They can't complain. I'm not convinced. I think the sensible, and who we don't know, we're not epidemiologists, are we, Terry? But we don't know how it's going to pan out. But my thought is that when the whole lockdown is over, you've got to come out of it quite slowly, haven't you? You've got to come out, you know, that, as in lift it, see how everyone is, and put it back down again if you need to. You know, you can't just sort of, hey, bang, let's have a World Cup straight away. No. You know, you can't do that.
No, and I think as well, the only thing I would say is I've been irritated slightly by the fact that when we are allowed to go back to normal and everything, and then the world of football, is that some people are saying the player's going to need 2 or 3 weeks preparation and pre-season. Not a chance. Mm. You know, it's in an ideal world, yes, but with the schedule, how it's going to be for this season and next season, the players are going to have to keep themselves in shape. Squads are bigger now than they've ever been. So if it is a game every 2 or 3 days, it's never going to be 9 in 9 days. That's just stupid. You know, how are people going to afford to go and watch them if we can go and watch them? If you've got to go and watch 9 in 9 days. And, you know, there are some people, that, a lot of people that will do exactly that. So there has to be an element of realism in it. And, you know, a game every 2 or 3 days with the squads that players have now shouldn't be an issue for, you know, clubs in the major leagues in Europe. Lower down the divisions, of course, it's going to be a problem. We know all the other problems that are going to be around in terms of players out of contract and stuff like that. Are they going to be allowed to play? Are they going to want to play after, you know, June the 30th? That's going to be an issue, but I'm sure that can be resolved. But no, I think that the as soon as we are clear, but the problem is we don't know when that's going to be. So if the players are out for 6 months, then that might be an issue. We might have to give them a couple of weeks, of course. But if it's a month or two, then I think as soon as the whistle's blown, they've got to be up and ready to go straight away.
Yeah, and if anything goes, it's got to be the tours, hasn't it? The money spinning tours.
That's what will happen. The clubs will get 2 or 3 weeks. They'll be off to La Manga. They'll be off to Marbella. They'll be off to Qatar for a week's pre-season and a game here and a game there. We can't be having that. It has to be, you know, a week's notice. You hope the players are being responsible, and you know I'm sure they are. And you know when they're ready for action. We can't be worrying about, oh, he might pull a hamstring, he might pull a calf. You know, it's something that's going to have to be, you know, gotten with as quickly as we're allowed to be, as quickly as we can. And, you know, if consequences is one or two players picking up muscular injuries, then, as I said, the squads are big enough to rotate and everybody's going to be in the same position. So we just, you know, want to get on with it as soon as we're all allowed to.
Right, Chris Noakes, is a big fan of the EFL, growing interest in La Liga. Can you answer a question? I've always wondered, is there a Spanish version of Neil Warnock? Old school, not the cool choice, but with an unquestioning record. Well, who wants that tag?
Yeah. I guess Borderless would come.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Just a cool-looking version.
Yeah, and he just moans everything, and he's got nothing to moan about. He's got nothing to moan at, but it suits the, you know, the spirit of Getafe, who slowly but surely people across Europe are grudgingly starting to give them the credit they deserve. It will still surprise people in the next round of the Europa League if that's played, when they play Inter Milan. It will still, you know, surprise people that, first of all, Getafe are in it. They're still in it. They were in Europe in the first place. They're still in it. And they're playing Inter Milan. Oh, Inter Milan, that's an easy draw for them. That won't be the case. But I guess Borderless is the one that springs to mind.
Yeah, agreed. But to be fair, Neil Warnock's in his 70s. So there's no direct equivalent, is there? Still going at that. That age. Gavin, who's a Valencia fan, I checked if it was which Gavin it was, just whether it was La Liga Gav with a new name. It's not, it's a different one. And in Gavin's profile, I think it's about being nice to each other, except for Anil Murty, who he describes as in rude terms. And then his question is, why is Ferran Torres not rated highly enough to get a competitive contract by Anil Murty, the president of Valencia?
Well, you should be. I don't know why. That's a mistake if they don't do that. If his buyout clause is low enough, then he'd be gone in the next transfer window. He's a super player. He's been helped this season by the injuries to other senior players, which meant he got his chance and a prolonged chance, not just a couple of games and then back on the bench or back in the B team. They've been forced into using him, and now he's become an important player. A year's time, he might be one of those. I won't be surprised to see him in the European Championship squad for Spain under Luis Enrique. I think he's a super player.
Brian, best stadium environment. So I guess you're talking about atmosphere, unless you've got particular strong views on the architecture.
Yep, or the corporate hospitality facilities. That doesn't really come into my reckoning. Do you know, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because I'm choosing out two clubs in the same city.
Same city as we talked about before.
Exactly, because it just adds everything. And it is unique. I haven't been to the new San Mamés, but I've obviously been to Sevilla and Betis on a number of occasions, and they're hard to split. So there's something about the city of Sevilla, which we've always said, if you want to get a real flavour of La Liga, you know, it's such a colourful atmosphere. The climate is good. The passion of the supporters is what makes it. Two very different stadiums. I'm going to go for Betis, a full-up Betis. I think it's just that because it's slightly bigger and you do get an extra 10, 15,000 supporters in there, and it does make it just gives it the advantage in terms of noise. But there's nothing to split between the two in terms of passion.
And a bit more consistent, I guess, Betis. I mean, I've seen some of it, and it's been absolutely breathtaking. The when the fans are singing in a good voice, but there are quite a few games where Sevilla fans are not, and I think that's the case in lots of Spanish grounds. I think one thing that the English have over the Spanish is the away fan culture. I think I know it's a smaller place, but it's long established tradition over a century and a half of people going to away games, and I think it just keeps the atmosphere level up a bit more consistently. One last question. I don't know if you remember someone called Andy Bishop. I certainly don't. He says, if you could self-isolate with anyone from this Sky Sports La Liga team from years gone by, who would it be?
If Damo.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I want someone that's going to keep me... make it humorous. It would have to be Damo.
Yeah, although one other. I tell you, if I had months, Ozzy Ardiles. Because he's such an interesting bloke, but obviously in 2-3 minute slots on the telly, you can't, they played well, it should have been a corner. Whereas if you really talk to Ozzy about life, philosophy, politics and everything like that, it's so hard to get that over in any kind of broadcast medium, isn't it? So
I guess I need to describe Damo, don't we really, for obviously people that don't know Damo. What was Damo's real name? Damien, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
Yep, Damo. He had. He was always one of those guys that looked as if he was in need of a hipster makeover. He had a long hair that was not in a particular style, a long beard that was definitely not in a style, and walked around carrying a bag for life everywhere. But he was a Liverpool supporter, a Scouser, great sense of humour, and. Whenever I went to Sky and at the time that he was working there, it could be any time of the day, any day of the week, he was there working. We had so many people like that involved at Sky that, you know, made it an enjoyable environment to work in with great people for, I did it for 12 years. So it was, that's why I've gone for Damo. So I'll try and find a picture and put it on Twitter of Damo. If Damo's listening, Damo, send me a picture.
I will. I'll write to him and tell him he's not a great social media fiend.
I guess not. Yeah.
Right, Terry. Well, stay safe and in the house and everything else. Enjoy watching all of the football. There aren't enough football documentaries in the world, we've discovered as well in this crisis. So the Greavesy one is on BT again for the 57th time.
Brilliant.
They need to get more out, don't they? And keep watching those football documentaries. And we'll have a chat again sometime soon.